verse 46 through verse 52. Mark 10, 46. And they came to Jericho. And as he went out of Jericho with his disciples, and a great number of people, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the highway side begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." And many charged him that he should hold his peace, but he cried the more a great deal, "Thou son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. And they called the blind man, saying unto him, "Be of good comfort, rise, he calleth thee." And he, casting away his garment, rose and came to Jesus. And Jesus answered and said unto him, "What wilt thou that I should do unto thee?" The blind man said unto him, "Lord, that I might receive my sight." And Jesus said unto him, "Go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole." And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. Now I want you to notice verse 49, and it says, "And Jesus stood still." I want to speak to you from a question this morning. And the question is, what does it take to stop Jesus? The Lord bless you, may be seated. Before I begin today, let me say what a great honor it is to be here. And truthfully, the privilege is mine. God has permitted me over the years to be allowed to participate in the lives of people, and that's a privilege. And I count it a great honor to be invited to come and speak to you. And I do hope that something I say to you today can impact your life in such a way that you will be different than the way you came. The passage of Scripture that I have read to you today takes place towards the end of Jesus' life. He is about to make his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Shortly thereafter, he will be crucified. He is going to Jerusalem for the Passover. And as he is making his journey from Galilee to Jerusalem, he comes through the city of Jericho, which tells us that the route that Jesus took from Galilee to Jerusalem was to follow the Sea of Galilee and then follow the Jordan River. And as he got close to Jerusalem, he would then make his way through Jericho and then on to Jerusalem. Jericho is only 15 miles from Jerusalem. Jericho is one of those places that probably shouldn't be here, because when God delivered Jericho to Israel when they crossed the Jordan River and began the conquest of Israel, God commanded them to destroy the city, and it should not have been rebuilt. It was rebuilt. Now, so that they didn't violate the Word of God, they moved it a little ways. It wasn't quite on the site of the original, but close. It was close enough to see the ruins. You could leave Jericho and go just a mile or so down the road, and there you would encounter the old city, or the ruins of the old city. You could see the tops of the walls that had disappeared into the ground. Jericho had become a city that the Levites lived in. It was a city that one of the 26 divisions of the priesthood that operated in the temple chose to make their place of abode. There were over 20,000 priests that participated in worship in Jerusalem, And because of the great number, they were divided into 26 different groups. And each of those groups would work a particular week. So twice a year, they would officiate in the temple. The other weeks of the year, the 50 weeks of the year, they would live in the city of their choice. And Jericho has become a city that the priests have chosen to live in. So as Jesus comes into Jericho, he is entering hostile territory. He is on his way to the Passover, to Jerusalem. And as custom of that day, when a rabbi went to Jerusalem for the Passover, it was very common for a large crowd to follow him as he went. This crowd had been with Jesus for quite a while. He has left Galilee. He's made his way down the Jordan River, and he is now approaching Jericho. This journey probably took a week to 2 weeks for them to get there. And on the way, he has been teaching them. As he comes to Jericho and he begins to enter Jericho, there is a blind man. Matthew says there's two men that are there that are blind. Matthew or Mark and Luke only record one. And Mark is the only one who tells us who he really is. His name is Bartimaeus, or he is the son of Timaeus, because Bar means son of, so he is the son of Timaeus. And he is sitting by the wayside begging. Mark lets us know that when he requests of Jesus his sight, what he really asked for is that I might see again. He was not born a blind man. Somewhere in his life, something had happened that had caused him to lose his sight. As Jesus approaches, Bartimaeus hears that Jesus comes, and he begins to cry out. I do not know who has shared the information with Bartimaeus of who Jesus is. It does not appear that Jesus has been through Jericho before. I don't know how this man sitting by the road had heard the story of Jesus. I don't know where he came or who came to tell him about Jesus. And as Jesus approaches or goes by and he hears the crowd and someone informs him that it's Jesus, he begins to cry with a loud voice, "Jesus, thou son of David." Bartimaeus did not understand or see Jesus for who he really was. Bartimaeus does not have his theology correct when he calls out to Jesus. He calls him by the name of the son of David, who should be a conquering king. He calls him as the one who is going to assume the throne of Israel. He declares his kingship, and he declares that he will be coming to reign in Israel. And that was not the purpose of Jesus coming. So he did not really understand who Jesus was or why he was coming. God does not expect you to understand him for him to be able to touch you. One of the requirements of being touched by God is that you have to have your theology correct. He is not necessarily interested in whether you really understand who he is at the moment. But if you are touched by him, the odds are you will follow him. And once you start following him, then you can understand who he is. Bartimaeus doesn't have theology down correct. He's not understanding who he really is. But he hears it's Jesus, and he begins to cry out. And the crowd tries to quieten Bartimaeus, and Mark says he cried the more. The first cry that Mark used was just a loud voice. And a man who was saying loudly, Jesus, thou son of David. But when he said he cried the more, the term that he uses is the term of an animal crying out that injury or an animal in distress. It's a call of desperation. When he was told to be quiet, he recognized that he might miss his opportunity to be affected by Jesus. And in desperation, he cries with an animal voice, a cry of desperation to get the attention of Jesus. And when he cries out, Jesus stood still. He stops instantly. He didn't understand the words, but he understood the emphasis of the word. He couldn't hear what Bartimaeus was saying. There are too many people around him crying out. He didn't necessarily hear his name. What he heard was a cry of desperation. And that cry of desperation is what stopped Jesus in his tracks that day. And then Jesus begins to inquire and says, bring whoever that is to me, because this is a desperate person. And God always responds to your desperation. The fact is, if Bartimaeus had not cried out, he would have never had the opportunity to be touched by Jesus again. Because within just a matter of a week, Jesus will be crucified. So this was an opportunity that only came once in the lifetime. And when Jesus was passing, he had no clue Jesus was going to be crucified shortly. He just knew that if he didn't get his attention, he would not get his petition answered. Mark tells us something that happened that day. I've read these passages of scriptures for years and never paid attention to what Mark said happened that day. But Mark says that the first thing he did when those that were by him, they said to him, be of comfort. He calls thee, arise. He's asking for you. And the next thing he does is cast away his garment. He had to get rid of that cloak that represented his life. Because he was a beggar. And the coat or garment that he was wearing identified what he was and identified his lifestyle and his condition. By throwing that cloak aside, he was saying to Jesus, I know you're going to answer my prayer. I know you're going to touch me. I know that you will make a difference in my life. And he disrobed himself of the thing that was binding him. There are too many people that come to Pentecostal pews that are bound by things in life, and you leave with them because you're not willing to discard what binds you. You sit on a pew with things from past, from conditions of life that you have learned to be comfortable with. It recognizes and identifies who you are. And because it's a statement of your life, you have become comfortable with the baggage. And the only way to stop Jesus is when you're willing to get rid of the baggage and willing to take a risk and step into an area that you are not comfortable with. You may have never been there before, and you may never have the opportunity to go there again. But here is an opportunity to get past who you are and where you are and get past your life and step into a new life. I am convinced that you and I basically predict and prophesy our futures. We do it by our words. We do it by our behavior. We say things that become self-fulfilling prophecies to our lives. We do things that dictate and define who we are. See, I know that in our culture, we have made up a lot of myths about life and relationships that are just myths. They're fairy tales. But God didn't give you a soulmate. You chose that soulmate. You made choices. Now, we will say and we will state that this person is the will of God for my life. Well, if that's true, then 85% of your world can never find the will of God. Because 85% of your world today don't have the privilege of picking a mate. Mom and dad do it for them. So if who you find is the will of God, then it can only happen in America and cultures who give people the privilege of picking their mates out. But I can tell you what connects you to somebody. It's that self-fulfilling prophecy that you have defined of your life of who you are. It's the heart picture that you've learned to trust and believe that can be defective. Because Solomon says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And you will never be greater than the way you see yourself. And the image and definition that you have of your life is all that you can become. It doesn't matter how many talents you have. It doesn't matter what your abilities are. None of those matter if the heart has defined you as a failure. That heart picture is what attracts you to somebody else. And if you check them out carefully, you'll discover that their heart picture usually matches yours. So it's not uncommon for two people who don't have good images of themselves to make an attraction to one another. And in doing so, a lot of chaos shows up. But it doesn't have to be that way. The fact is, you literally become a healing agent that would allow you to heal somebody else's life if you would just get rid of the garment. If you'd take that robe off, you open a door of opportunity of healing not only in your life, but everybody's life that's connected to you. See, I hear people's stories all the time about what life's done and how they've got here and all these issues and problems they have. And that's your garment that you wear. That's your safety. That's what you beg in. That's the garment necessary to beg God. Oh, God, get me out of here. God, make me different. God, I need something. God, I do this. And you've learned to become a beggar instead of being transformed. Bartimaeus had such an encounter with Jesus that day. Jesus told him, go home. Go thy way. Go back to your family. Go get reconnected to people in life. He doesn't do that. He follows Jesus. The odds are incredibly high that Bartimaeus stood and was one of those that was there to see Jesus in that last week of his ministry. He followed him because he had discovered there is a place safe enough to leave discarded things that nobody else can ever drag back up or nobody else can ever destroy your life with. You see, another lady at a well discovered it was safe enough to leave a water pot, which was a representation of her past. It was the stigma of who she was. It was a mockery of her life. And she left it at his feet and nobody was ever able to take it or remind her. I hear people say all the time and tell me stories of how the world and the devil and everybody else does certain things to their lives and causes certain conditions to happen in their life. As long as you keep wearing that robe, Satan has all of the evidence he needs to torment and terrify your life. It's only when you get rid of that garment that you free yourself to become the vessel of honor God made you to be to start with. It's only when you discover how to step past all that junk that you can become the treasure. Our world puts all of its emphasis on appearance. Your world is more interested in what you look like than who you are. So we have learned to allow our world to define us by the exterior. Our world defines us by the clothes we wear and the way we comb our hair and the things we do to ourselves. That's their image of you. That's what they think you are. But the fact is, your eyeballs are not on retractable sockets that allows you to take a look at yourself. You have no clue what you look like. You have no clue what the package and the wrappings and all this stuff looks like in your life. You have no clue if you've got it on right. I have no clue if my tie's straight. I don't know if my clothes are buttoned correctly. I can't see them. I feel and try to make sure they are, but I don't know. Well, we let our world define us by the external and the appearance instead of who God made us to be. And so we spend our lives defining ourselves by the outward part, which is the part of us that will destroy us if we're not careful. That's that beggar's robe we're wearing. If you ever discover that he's safe and that he will never take advantage of you, he will never abuse you. He will never use you. He will never make a public spectacle out of you. He will never allow an enemy to drag your past into the present and allow that enemy to expose your life. He's not going to allow that to happen. If the devil is giving you a bad time in life and your life is being affected by him, the odds are incredibly high. It has something to do with the robe you chose to wear. That's right. But if you'll get rid of it, there's instant healing. What did Bartimaeus need healed? His eyes, so he could see. We are willingly blind. We can't see. We have no clue where we're going. I guarantee you, the odds are incredibly high. If you would start talking to the people around you and involve them in a conversation, start asking them questions about where they're going in life, most people don't have a clue where they're going. We're just living life from day to day with no direction, no purpose. Where are we going? What's your destination in life? Where do you really want to go in life? What do you want out of life? What is your purpose for life? Well, our purpose for life and the place we really should be putting our emphasis is heaven. But we don't hardly talk about heaven anymore. We don't talk about the coming of the Lord anymore. We're more concerned with the day and the opportunity and what's happening around us than the destination of where we're going. See, Bartimaeus had to make a choice to follow Jesus. Jesus didn't make him follow him. When God frees you from the binds or bounds of Satan and the chains of your past, He doesn't put a collar around your neck and add a chain to it and just drag you wherever He wants you to go. The moment He frees you from all of yesterday and the past of your life is the day you've got to make a conscious decision on where you're going and who you follow. And you can either follow Jesus or you can follow self. See, I'm not worried about you following the devil. You're not going to follow him anywhere. He's not the head of your house no more. He can't make you do nothing. You've been free from him. So that's not the problem. The problem is you're either going to follow Jesus or you're going to follow you. And your life will be defined by what you want, what your goals are, what your ambitions are, what your dreams are, and you'll become very selfish and self-centered, or you'll choose to identify yourself with Jesus and recognize that your life only has purpose when you follow Him. See, God's not going to drag you to an altar and make you pray. God's not going to force you to repent. God's not going to force you to read the Bible. He's not going to force you to do anything in life. If you respond to God, it's by choice. It's because you choose to do it. And I am convinced today that everybody in this house is as close to God as they want to be. There is nothing that keeps me from Jesus. There's nothing keeps me from getting closer to Him. The only reason we don't get closer to Him is the closer I get to Him, the more of Him that becomes dominant in my life and the less of me that becomes dominant in my life. And the closer I get to Him, the more of Him I see and the more of me I perceive. And it's real uncomfortable getting close enough to God where you really learn who you are. So we've learned how to wear a robe. We've learned how to put a coat on. We've learned how to become comfortable with what grandma did or grandpa did or dad did or mom did or some word somebody said that makes me feel worthless or has wrecked my life or some behavior that somebody committed against me. And that has become the defining point of my life. We're blind to our circumstances. We're blind to our lives and the conditions around us. You know, to be really truthful, I don't know how to say this without being rude. If I'm rude, I'm sorry, all right? To be really truthful, the problems of our life, we know how to fix them. And we know the answers to them. There's nobody has a problem in their life they don't know how to fix. We all do. But see, our world has made us comfortable with the package. And I don't know how to act if I don't have this robe on. I don't know how to be me without this robe. And so we're afraid to be vulnerable. We're afraid to open ourselves and to really become vulnerable with God. If you are not willing to be absolutely and totally vulnerable, you're going to be carrying that robe all your life. If the Lord doesn't come 20 years from now, you'll be dragging that same stuff around. And all that junk's still going to be bothering you. And all those issues, you're going to be talking. As a matter of fact, the older you get, the more focused you become on it. And there will come a time in your life when that's all you see is the junk. You don't see anything else. And you get trapped. And you can come to church, but you really don't enjoy your relationship with God. I can't read minds. I have no clue what you think. Even though you might think I do. I've begged God. God, don't tell me one thing. I don't want to know nothing about nobody's life. I don't need you whispering in my ear while I'm preaching. That person over there's got this problem. I don't want to know it, God. I just don't want to know it. I know enough without it. I can't read your mind, but I can read your face. Because everything in your life shows up on your face. And here's the problem. You have no clue it shows up. I really didn't realize how it really shows up. A couple of weeks ago, I'm driving down the street with my wife, and she says something I don't like. It kind of irritated me a little bit. That's not hard to do the older I get. I just don't have quite as much patience as I used to have. And so she said something I didn't like. Now, I didn't say a word. I just kept driving. And I got about a block down the street, and she said, "What's that look for?" I had no clue that my brain had given me away. You know what's sad? It's when I start dealing with these issues, you suck up like a clam. You pull your shell over and clamp it shut, and you're not going to get past it. It shows up on your face. It shows up as defiance. If I had a camera up here to show you what you look like while I'm preaching, it'd be quite interesting. It's not hard to tell when I struck a nerve in your life and you don't like it. That's the robe you wear. We're blind knowing we're blind. But we've become so comfortable with being blind, it's a safe place to live. But there's a better place to live in life. See, God didn't make you to be junk or broke or damaged. God's never said, "Oops." There's not a human alive that's a mistake. God didn't mess up when He decided what kind of chromosomes to put together to make you. David said, "I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Thy soul knows right well. When I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth, thine eyes did see my substance when was being made in continuance and when as yet there was none of them." At the instant of conception, God pins your life and describes your whole life from cradle to grave. God's not shocked that at 60 years of age I've lost a little bit of hair. God's not shocked I've got wrinkles. God's not shocked at what I look like. He said, "Wow, life was tough on you." He, from the cradle to the grave, He wrote the history of my body. He chose the chromosomes that made you. You don't like your nose? God picked out what it looked like. Why are you letting your world define you by your appearance? You got problems with looks and the outside, and the body's not in the right proportion or right shape. See, that's that robe you've been wearing. And until you're willing to take it off, you're going to be blind all your life. But I'm here to tell you today that Jesus is walking by, and all you've got to do is recognize there's no sense living like this anymore. I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't have to live like this anymore. All you've got to do is cry out in desperation. And the instant desperation shows up and God hears a cry of desperation, He will stop. And then He will ask you, "What do you want? What would you like for me to do?" You think Jesus didn't know what his problem was? Bartimaeus had to identify his problem. You can't heal or be healed until you're willing to identify your problem. You want God to heal your mind of lust? Then you got to be willing to say, "This is my battle and this is the robe I'm wearing." And you got problems with addictions to pornography? You got to admit, "This is my problem and the robe I'm wearing." And when you can identify what the issue is, God will heal it. But you got to take the robe off. There's no healing without disrobing. You want your life different? Quit being a beggar. You got to make a decision. When Jesus said, when they said He's calling you, He's inviting you, He knew He had to get out of who He was to become who God had made Him to be. Life and disease had lost His eyesight. But He knew that wasn't what He was, but that's what His life showed. That's the robe He had on, and so He had to get the robe off for God to heal His life. Sometimes some of you wear shame, and it's the robe you live in, because somebody did something in life that caused a lot of shame. And I can promise you today that shame has never changed one person. Alcoholics have a lot of shame, but they are never changed because shame only brings condemnation. Bartimaeus was ashamed. He was a beggar. But he didn't let his shame of being a beggar keep him from Jesus' presence. Our world's taught us to live in it. So we let our shame of our mistakes and our failures, our shortcomings, and we think God's out to get us. Folks, if God wanted to take you out, let me tell you, you'd be dead right now. Okay? If God's wanting to get even with you, your life's been over a long time ago. God's not trying to wreck your life. He's trying to save your life and restore your life to what it could be. And God wants you to have the absolute, ultimate life that He designed for you to live. God didn't create you to live on a mountain and in a valley. He didn't design you to be bipolar, up one day and down the next, having highs and lows, highs and lows. That's not what this is about. God saved you so your life could become consistent. Jesus prophesied that you'll push the mountains in the valleys so that the valley is no longer deep and the mountain is no longer high. You're just going to level life out. And you can walk on a straight plane instead of up here and down here and up here and down here. And the only way that's going to happen today, folks, is you've got to get rid of the garment. See, all of us get comfortable with things. And the moment you get comfortable with anything in your life is the day you become a slave to it. What do you get comfortable with? If you get comfortable living with your life the way it is, and you say, well, it can't be any different, that's the day you become a slave to it. Because the fact is, there's nothing in your life you can't change if you choose. You don't like your economic standard living? There's nothing in your world can keep you from being different or better. It just takes a little work on your part. So you're not willing to invest the time to make changes, but you're willing and comfortable to live in the junk. I had to preach at a place not long ago, and there's no airport close by, so I had to fly in, rent a car, and drive. And I'm driving to this place, and along the way, there was a shorter route to take some of the back roads instead of go to the highway. Probably 50 miles shorter, and so I didn't have time, wasn't a big deal. So I just started, I drove the back road, and I'm driving. As I'm driving along, I start noticing the homes people were living in. And I start noticing what people were satisfied to live in. And I'm thinking, why would you be content? There are 10 rusted cars in the front yard. The front porch is rotted and fell off on one side. They got the porch propped up with some kind of steel post. Nobody takes the time to fix nothing. Just live the way it is. That's what your world has taught you to do. Live the way it is. And because of that, we've drug that attitude in this church. And so in church, we just live the way it is. When the fact is, there's no mountain I cannot ascend. There's no height I cannot go to if I choose. God is no respecter of person. And if He let an apostle Paul go to the third heaven, I've got a right to go to the third heaven. God doesn't keep nobody out of those experiences. I just have to choose to be willing to go where he went to get what he saw. It won't happen because I'm not willing to take the journey. If you're not willing to offer the sacrifice, but you're willing to live in an old dilapidated rundown thing that looks like it's going to fall in on you, will you just go ahead and live there? But I'm going to tell you something. Don't expect me to live with you, okay? I'm fed up with people living their lives like that. There's a better way for you to live life than simply just existing. God didn't create you to exist. He created you to be victorious. And if I can get you to live life right, you'll affect everybody that's around you. You'll change the life of your friends. You'll change the life of your neighbors. You'll change the life of those people at work because they see somebody who has purpose. But you'll never get there dragging yesterday with you. You can't get there with a robe on. You gotta take the robe off. That old man in prison about to be executed by Nero said, I haven't quite apprehended that at which I'm apprehended of, but this one thing I do. I take the robe of yesterday off. I don't care if I persecute the church. It doesn't matter how many people I saw killed for the name of Jesus Christ. That's who I was. That's not what I am. I today stand in the life I have become, looking towards the life I anticipate to become. And I'm looking towards my future, not my past. I will not allow yesterday to define anything about my life. I will not allow my failures to define where I'm going. I will not allow people to define where I'm going. I will take my life in my hand and I will decide my future and I will go where God leads me. And wherever God goes, I will follow Him. He's not going to drag me to heaven. I am going to willfully follow Him on this journey. Stand with me this morning. We've already talked about miracles today. Miracles are in this house. But the only way that miracle is going to happen in your life is for you to take that robe off. And if you'll get the robe of your life off, He's then going to ask you, what do you want? And when you can voice in your words what you would like for Him to do for your life, it'll happen. Because thy faith has made thee whole. See, your faith demands God taking that robe off, demanded that Jesus heal him because he had already stepped in. He wasn't walking in his old life. He had stepped into the arena of faith and he was walking in faith. And because he approached walking in faith, Jesus had no option but to heal him. And if he had given Jesus a list of 100 things to do, they'd all happen that day. But all he really wanted was to see again. I just want to see what's happened in my world that I haven't seen before. I'd just like to see my world for what it really is. If you want to see your world clearly today, why don't you ask God to heal your blindness? What have you become blind to in your own life? See, I can really get deep right here if I want to. And I will for a moment. Some of you have become blind to holiness. You're willfully blind to it. You don't want to see it. If you don't want to see it, I got news for you. He'll help you not see it. That's not what you want to see. You want to keep that robe on that this is not necessary and it's not part of life. The atmosphere changed incredibly, didn't it? So you're not willing to be really honest about some things in life. All I have to do is point out one of them and I put a blanket on this place, which means there are a whole lot more than the one I just addressed. Why does God have to call everything out in your life before you stand up and say, oh, is he talking to me? All Bartimaeus had to do was hear somebody say, Jesus is coming by. Jesus didn't have to stop and say, Bartimaeus, you got a problem? All that had to happen was for Bartimaeus to recognize Jesus is close by. I can get his attention. And the moment he decided to get his attention, he got it. He stopped Jesus in his tracks. If you're not willing, see, all you guys that have issues in your marriage, you got a robe on. And you're not willing to get rid of the robe. It's too comfortable to live where you've been with what you have than to get out of that and become something different. You've trusted. It's a garment you trust. Oh, you live with saying bad words to each other. You've made that robe so thick, it doesn't matter how big that flamethrower is that scorches you. You've got an insulated jacket on. So you blow torches at one another. The tongue's a flamethrower. It's a fire from hell, is what James said. It scorches them. So you've learned to cover up. You've got that robe on that allows you to protect yourself. You're insulated. I just read yesterday where I got to be careful, I'll say this. Mentally challenged dingbat jumped out of an airplane at 70-something thousand feet so he could float to the earth. And the next place he's going is 120 miles up at the edge of space so he can float back to earth. They had to design him a special suit so he don't freeze to death. If his skin is exposed to the atmosphere, his blood will boil instantly. Poof. Now tell me that's not stupid. Oh, but his name's going to be in the Guinness Book of Records. History's going to talk about this guy that had no brains. They had to create a special suit for him to do this in. Some of you create special suits you live in. Oh, you're insulated from heat. She can be as cold as she wants to be. You won't ever feel 1 ounce of her frigid nature. You just become insulated. Oh, you'd like for me to preach about things that we shout about. Well, that's not where your problem is. The reason you can't smile at one another and you get further and further apart when I preach is an indication that it's not about church, it's about home. Now everybody's looking different directions. You won't even look at them because you think I'm reading your face. See, we got comfortable. We get comfortable with what we do. What we say, how we say it, and that role, it just becomes more fitted, and it becomes more comfortable, and we're not willing to take it off and risk being made to look foolish. What if Jesus hadn't healed Bartimaeus that day? Everybody in town would have laughed and said, "Did y'all see how silly Bartimaeus was? He made a fool of himself." Those were the Levites. You don't think he would have been. There's odds incredibly high that Bartimaeus is a Levite. He's in a Levite town. Everybody lives here are Levites. The odds are incredibly high. He's not just a Levite. The odds are incredibly high that Bartimaeus is a priest. So he's going to be made fun of. We're going to mock him. Then stop him. Because he is desperate. When you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll change your life. Until you get there, just keep doing it the way you are. Eventually, hopefully, you'll get sick of where you live and make a choice. I don't have to live here anymore, and I will not live like this. And the day you take that robe off is the day your life begins a change that's forever. Gracious Father, thank you for creating such an incredible place. There's no place as safe as your presence. God, I pray today that your children will feel safe enough to lay some things down. Somebody may be carrying a water pot today that stigmatizes their life and is a representation of where they've been and the history of what brought them to this place. God, I pray today they'd feel safe enough in your presence to lay that vessel down to get rid of a water pot. Lord, if we're blind to life, help us today to be willing to disrobe ourselves from the comfort of life as we live it at the moment and be willing to step into a new life when we may not have a clue where you're going to take us tomorrow, but we know we're just following you. And wherever the journey takes us, we're going to follow. God, I pray today that we would become comfortable enough that we'd recognize the problems we create in our own lives and be man and woman enough to admit where those problems come from and take those things out of our lives. I know it's your desire to heal us. But what testimony would I be to my world if you healed me of my life and I kept wearing that old robe I had all my life? See, I would not show my world 1 ounce of redemption or 1 ounce of creation if I don't get the robe off and the past off and walk out of here a totally new, healed person. My world has absolutely no hope of healing because my testimony, my life, defines the healing process of my world. God, I pray today that we would be brave enough to take the journey. God, I pray today that we would be brave enough to take the risk of crying out. And people around us may be shocked and horrified at the cry because it may sound like an animal crying. But when I cry out to you in desperation, you will always heal. Thank you for your healing power. If you stop healing, you have changed. So I know that it's your nature to heal, and you will never stop healing. So the reason we're not healed must mean we have our robes on. So God, I'm asking today that revelation would show up in our lives, and we're willing to take the robe off so that your healing power could minister and move among us. In the name of Jesus, who's here today, if there's something you need from life, I invite you to come. I open these altars for you today. Your life could be totally different if you want it to be. It's your choice today. The journey is not forced.